So in 2010, Paulette and Gene Kranich's grandson started a fire in a burn barrel outside the couple's home in Tennessee. And then he went inside to take a shower, and he looked out a few minutes later and noticed that the fire was no longer in the burn barrel. It was headed towards the house. And so he called the fire department, and the South Fulton City Fire Department quickly arrived. But instead of gathering their hoses, they refused to spray an ounce of water on the house. Why is that? Because in that area, you have to pay a fire service subscription, and the Kranichs had apparently forgotten to pay the $75 fire subscription fee. And because of that, their house burned to the ground. That's pretty bad, isn't it? That your house not only burns to the ground, but it burns to the ground because you forgot to pay a fee. Well, I'm going to be talking this morning in our passage about something that's even worse than how forgetting to pay a service fee for fire and causing it to burn to the ground. In this morning's passage, we're going to see how the people of Israel forgot about God. They forgot about God. And so what happens when you do that? That's what we're going to see today. And we're going to talk about how we can prevent that in our own lives and then in the lives of our children as well. So let me go to read our main passage, and starting verse 7. This is chapter 2, verse 7. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. Skip to verse 10. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. So did you catch that last verse there? There was a generation that knew Joshua and knew mostly knew God. And so they were mostly devout. We talked about that last week. But then the children of that generation, the next generation then, do not even know God. This, of course, begs the question, what happened between one generation who was doing mighty things through God and another generation who doesn't even know God? I'm not going to go into all the details because we talked about it a lot last week. But in chapter 1, we saw that the generation just somewhat followed God. And so that generation, they knew God and they followed him somewhat. And so then compromise began to creep in. And this then led to them letting the pagan nations live among them, live with them. When instead God had told them to drive them out completely, they compromised. So they let this sin and this compromise into their lives. And then slowly over time, it creeps in further and further until now the next generation doesn't even know God. And here's the results of that. Verse 11. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals, the false gods. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their father, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them. And they bowed down to them. And they provoked the Lord to anger. They abandoned the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtoreth. Now, sadly, this is not just a historical lesson, but this is something that happens throughout history, where there's one generation who is devout, following after God, and the very next generation does not know God at all. I read about how in 1620 to 1640, the first settlers to New England were devout Christians, devout followers of Jesus. But by 1662, just one generation later, or really the transition between the two generations, that older generation realized that their younger generation was not very devout. And this caused problems because in that time, you could not get membership in a church. And that was very important in that time. You could not get membership in a church if you were not baptized. And they were only, these people, the younger generation was only baptized as an infant, and so they couldn't get membership. So they created, this older generation created what was called the halfway covenant. And that allowed those who were baptized at least as infants to be able to be voting people, to vote as members of their churches. And so this was not just because of a difference of opinion about baptism or something. This was because they did not follow God. One generation. And it changed so quickly. Last week we talked about us as adults or as those who are listening, not compromising the importance of doing that. And we've seen now the effects of that. But this morning I want to focus on really that verse 10 talking about how there was a generation that arose that did not know God. And so I want to focus on how can we prevent that from happening in our generation? How can we prevent our kids from growing up and not following God? What can we do as adults? What can we do as followers of God to make sure, at least to the best of our ability, that our kids know and love Jesus? Now, some of you may be thinking, Kyle, I don't have any kids. Should I drive away? Should I turn off Facebook right now? Kyle, my kids are long grown. They have grandkids. I'm so old, I have great grandkids. So should I just tune out and take a nap? I would propose to you that even if you don't have young kids in your house, there's something you can learn from this message I'm going to talk about for the next 20 minutes. And there's something, and not only maybe you can apply to your grandkids or great-grandkids, that you can help other families that you know that you have an influence with. And so if you will just humor me, older folks or folks without kids, if you will just humor me for the next 20 minutes, I think you will be able to get something out of this message. Just this week, earlier this week, I was cleaning out the worship pastor's office. That's, if you go through these doors here, there's the first office there is sort of like the worship director, worship pastor's office. And it is just full of musical junk in there, all sorts of stuff. And so I was in there with Richard and we were cleaning out some stuff. And I saw this big map in there. It's a huge map, like this big. And on it, it said something like, to be framed. I had no idea what it was for. And so I asked Richard, who's been here longer than me, and I asked him, I said, what is this map for? And he looked at it, he says, I have no idea. And so clearly, this map had been there a long time, but someone previously did not pass along this important information other than a little sign saying, to be framed. And so you know what I did with it? Threw it out. No, I haven't yet. Haven't yet. But if no one in this parking lot or drive or on Facebook lets me know soon what it's for, it is going in the trash. I hear a honk. Someone's like, please, no, don't throw out the map. Now, I want to encourage us. Got a little distracted there. I want to encourage us. Let's not be like that generation that puts out sort of like an important message on the map and then forgets to pass it along. Let's be a generation that intentionally spreads the message to the next generation so they know that they know that they know that Jesus Christ is important to us. Talking about cleaning the office, I was looking at some old bulletins, and one from 2017, I looked at the attendance, and it said on that particular day, there were four kids there on that Sunday. And so that was 3 or 4 years ago, but we have dramatically changed as a demographic here at the church. We now have so many kids running, at least pre-virus, running throughout the building where we have to be careful that we don't trip over them because we don't know, you know, these little heads down to our knees or to our waist. So we have to be careful about them. And so God has blessed our church with young children, with young families. And so this message is for you all and is showing that kids are important to us. And we want to see them know Jesus. And we want to see them grow up and not be like the generation in Israel that grew up to not even know God. And so parents, What can we do to give our kids the best chance to grow up to love God? I'm not saying what can we do to ensure that our kids love God, because that's out of our control. But what can we as parents do to give them the best chance? And here's the first thing. I'm going to give you a couple things to think about. This is not an exhaustive list, but here's the first thing that I want you to think about. We need to know God intimately ourselves. So as parents, as adults, as members of this church, we need to know God intimately ourselves. See, this was a major problem in Israel. The first generation knew God a little bit. They knew God some. God worked through them some, but they were full of compromise. And so they modeled it very poorly to the next generation. Now, let's think about it this way. Who is more likely to produce a basketball star? I'm going to give you two names. LeBron James or Kyle Lewis? Which one? This is not a trick question here. LeBron James is far more likely to produce a child that is a basketball star because he lives and breathes and clearly loves basketball. And so his kids are growing up with the idea that basketball is awesome. Me, on the other hand, I can't remember a time that my kids have ever played basketball. We don't have a basketball hoop at our house. They have never seen me watching basketball. They have never played with me, and I have never instructed them about the importance or my love for basketball, because there is none. So clearly, my kids are not going to grow up to know basketball, and so they're going to be far less likely to develop a love for the sport. Maybe they will later on, but more likely not. Now, which kids are more likely to grow up to love Jesus? It's those that are in a house where the parents know and love God. And if they will see that with their eyes, not just with what you say, but if they will see that your actions show that Jesus is important in this house, then they will begin to grow, hopefully. They will then be more likely, at least, to grow a love for God themselves. And so I'm praying that through my actions in my house, my kids may not know about basketball, but I pray that they will know about Jesus Christ in my house. And kids are very observant. They can sniff out hypocrisy. And so they're like sharks that can sniff out the blood in the water. And so if they see one of us, or if they see one of you saying one thing but doing another, they're going to know that what you're saying is not important. And so if you're telling them, yeah, we need to follow Jesus, but your actions are not showing it, then they are going to grow up not with the idea that you can talk about Jesus, but following Jesus is not all that important. And so I want to encourage you, know God intimately yourself. I remember when I served in a church a number of years ago, I met with a couple, and they were telling me how their teenage daughter was struggling with her faith. And so I began to ask them some questions and find out a little bit about their life. And it turns out that the mom is a Christian, but the dad is some form of atheist. And right there, I knew, no wonder she's struggling with her faith. Because she's getting mixed messages at home. And now I know there are some households, even here in our church, where it's not the same. And I'm not saying that your child is destined for failure spiritually. But parents, if you will see that your actions mean so much. Your words mean a lot also, but your actions, what you show in your life, means so much. And that will speak far more than just what you tell them, what they should believe or what they should know. Now, we all mess up. We all make mistakes. But there's a difference between a Christian who is headed in a slow but positive direction, spiritually speaking, and a Christian who only shows their beliefs on Sunday morning. And we don't want to be like the Sunday Christian. We're like, yes, Sunday morning, let's go worship Jesus. And then by Sunday afternoon, we're like, who's Jesus? Let's go watch football. We want Jesus to be center of our household Monday through Friday, plus Saturday and Sunday. Now, if you maybe can identify with the one, with the parents or with the people who are not close to God, there's still hope for you. Because God is welcoming you into his family, or maybe you've already put your faith in Christ. He is welcoming you back, just like the prodigal son. He's saying, anytime, come on back, and I will welcome you with open arms. And so if you have veered away or maybe drifted away from Jesus, and you are just living out a half-hearted faith, then yes, that is a poor witness to your kids. But you can just get right with God, even right now. And you can turn to him and ask him to help you with the sins that you're struggling with, or help him with the mediocrity that you're living out, so that you can have a close relationship with Jesus Christ. But after you do that, after you've turned to God for help, I want to encourage you to do one other thing, and that's to turn to the church. Turn to your pastor, to another church leader, because we love to help people. Let me tell you two things that as your pastor, I love to hear. First of all, pastor, we've made a lactose-free chocolate cake for you. I love to hear that, but we're not going to talk about that this morning. Here's the second thing. Pastor, I want to know how I can grow closer to God. That's right up my alley! I'm not a perfect Christian, but this is what I've been studying, and this is what I've been helping people do for years. And so I want to help you grow closer to God. The church wants to help you grow closer to God. And so after you've turned to God for help, then come to the church, and we will help you get involved in a group or in different things where you can grow closer to God. And so maybe you've never put your faith in Jesus Christ. Maybe you're here this morning, you're like, yeah, my kids barely know God. I don't even know God. And so the steps are the same. Turn to God and ask him to be the Lord of your life. And then once you've done that, then come and talk to me or to another church leader. And we want to help you start your relationship with Jesus Christ. And so, as I said, know God intimately. It makes it so much more easy for your kids to grow up to know God intimately themselves. Here's the second thing. We need to intentionally teach our kids to know and to love God. Ephesians 6:4 says, "Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." And so, in other words, don't think just because my kids go to Sunday school, they're going to be set for the week. Or just because my kids go to a Christian school, they're going to be set for the week. No, they need to get the instruction and the discipline and the discipleship year round in every part of their lives. I think of like boot camp when you get into the military. I haven't been in the military, but I've seen it on TV, so it must count. When you go into the military, you don't just sign up and then just get shipped off to a certain position. At least from my understanding, to learn about the military ways and to know how it works, you first go to boot camp. And in boot camp, it's not just a once a week service where they come on Sunday mornings and talk a little bit about what it's like to live in the military. It's not just a once-a-day thing where there's a couple of groups every now and then. No, this is a sort of an integrated week, multi-week, long process where day in and day out, they are learning and breathing military. And that's what I'm talking about when we're helping our kids grow closer to Jesus Christ. It's not just one thing. It's not just one lesson or once a week or one little thing that you're trying to get them into. This is a whole life, a whole experience where we're trying to help them and trying to teach them and share with them and show them how to love Jesus. And so how do we help them or how do we teach them? What do we teach them? And for the rest of this time, I'm going to show you, give you three things that we can be teaching our kids. And again, these are not exhaustive, just like the first list was not exhaustive. But these are very important. First of all, we need to teach our kids to love church. Love church. And I'm not just saying this as a pastor, because I can see in the lives of people as I've worked in church and as I've worked in other jobs as well, that it is so much easier to grow as a Christian if you are involved in a good gospel-centered church. And so I want to encourage every person here and to encourage their kids, to teach their kids, to model to their kids that church is important. And so attend regularly, not just every once in a while, but regularly attend church. Make sure show that it is a priority in your family. Get involved in church. Get involved in groups. Get to know other people in the church, other growing Christians that they can help you along the way, and then help others that are maybe struggling, that you can help them along the way. Serve in the church and through the church. Mission trips and ministries and outreaches. All these things are not only a great way to minister to the congregation or minister to the community, minister around, but it's also just an amazing way to connect with other people that you're serving. And then also, it strengthens your own faith as well. Now, are we here at Island Pond perfect? No. Do we do things perfectly? Absolutely not. I mean, no church does. And there's a lot of good churches out there. There's also probably some not so good churches out there. But what if instead of attending church just because you think it met your needs, what if you attended church because you knew that it would help you grow? There's a big difference there. I like how Gary Thomas, he's a writer about marriage, and he said this about marriage. He said, "What if God designed marriage to make us holy more than to make us happy?" And I want to put that in the context of church. What if God designed church to make us, to make you holy more than to make you happy? And so what if instead of you showing up and being like, "Oh, that guy's a hypocrite, I'm not coming back here." What if you're the one that is called to help that hypocrite? What if that person just confronted me about something? What if that person is called to confront you about your hypocrisy? And so church can be very happy at times, and it can make us very happy at times, and it can give us hope, but it can also drive us crazy. And because there are imperfect people here, but there are also people living life together that will hopefully be encouraging and strengthening each other. And so make church a priority in your family. And you are doing yourself and your family a huge disservice if you only attend church every once in a while. You really are. You are hurting your family spiritually if you only attend once in a while, and if you show your kids that it's not all that important. Here's the second thing that we should be teaching our kids. Teach them to apply their faith. Teach them to apply their faith. One of the things I've noticed, just as a Christian and as a pastor, is that many of us here in America have far more knowledge in our heads than we do in our hearts. And so we know so much about God, and we go to all these classes and groups, but very rarely do we take the time to then apply it to our lives. And so we know about the importance of evangelism. We know about the importance of sharing our faith. We know about the importance of living rightly. But how often do we live it out on a day-to-day basis? And so that's why finding opportunities for us to practice our faith is so important, and it's so important for our families as well. And so in my own life, just personally speaking, I've had various spiritual influences. But some of the biggest influences that I've had in my life have been when I went on mission trips, both locally and overseas. And I can just, I could just sit down with you and tell you thing after thing in my life now that is because of what happened when I was a teenager, a college student, going overseas. And so it wasn't until I was forced to share my faith as a 12-year-old in Mexico and stand up and give my testimony that I realized what exactly was going on here, spiritually speaking, about what it means to share your faith and why you need to have a growing relationship with God if you're going to be a Christian and tell other people about God. I remember going to places like Thailand and Vietnam and seeing these monks bow down to gold statues and just seeing the spiritual depravity. I remember going overseas to places like Ghana or to Thailand or Hong Kong and visiting these orphanages and seeing all these kids that were parentless. And seeing some of them go out and beg on the street to make money, knowing that some of them were going back to very unsafe places. And that had a huge impact on my life. And it's no wonder now that years later, my family went out and adopted two children because we saw just the horrible state of the world for kids. I remember one night in Ghana, Africa, when I just woke up in the middle of the night, had to go to the bathroom, but I just felt just this immense, fearful, terrible presence above me. And I sort of looked around, and I was an adult at that point. I was a college student. I sort of put the covers closer to me, and I began praying. And let me tell you, that situation just opened my eyes to, spiritually speaking, just the opposition that we have in this world. I also never made it to the bathroom that night. But different opportunities that I've had to go and to force myself even to share my faith, that began when my parents encouraged me to go on a mission trip overseas to Mexico. And it just began to grow from there. You can only teach your kids so much. And so at some point, you must get them out there to practice their faith. And that's the same for us as well as adults. Some of us are not growing because we are not getting out there and sharing our faith or practicing our faith. And so maybe you're stalled spiritually, and so maybe you as an adult even need to get out there and plan a mission trip for when we can get out there and fly again. Or maybe even you just need to plan an outreach with the church where we go out and share our faith together with people we don't know. Is it awkward? Absolutely. But does it challenge us and does it help us grow? Yes. Let me give you one more thing that we can do as parents to teach them. So we need to, that we can teach them, we should teach them about the Bible and worship. The Bible and worship. I was thinking about, what do we want our kids to know when they leave and go off to college or to get a job and move out of the house? You know, what are the most important things that we want them to go away with? You know, we want them to know how to change a tire. We want them to know how to be respectful to people. We want them to know how to have good job skills so they can work hard and all these things. And those are good things. But we certainly, as Christians, want them to know about God and about the Bible. And listen, the importance of teaching the Bible is that, yeah, maybe teaching them the Bible growing up, they won't catch it right away. But you are setting them up. So it's sort of like when you're out camping. And you go and you prepare the kindling there, the little sticks. And then you get some big sticks on top. And then you take the fire and you or the match and you throw it in there and it doesn't light. This happens to me all the time, so I'm just talking personal experience here. Throw another fire, another little bit of fire in there. It doesn't light. All right, that's what happens sometimes to kids as they grow up in your house and go off. But you know what? If they leave with a pre-built fire in place, you know, all the logs in place, then perhaps when they get to college or when they get to somewhere else where someone else shares their faith with them, that fire is ready to burn strong. And don't let them wait until then to begin building just basic Bible skills, because that's tough as an adult to do. It's not impossible. But if you will set them up growing up, then even if they leave without knowing Jesus Christ growing up, they are ready eventually for when God does work in their life. And so I want to encourage us to teach the Bible and to teach about worship. And this it's been called throughout history, the past 2,000 years, it's been called family worship. And so in my doctoral work, I did a lot of studying about family worship. And I read various accounts about how first century Christians, and then the many beyond that, over the past 2,000 years, would have this time that we would call family worship. And it's this time where families would gather together and worship God, study the Bible and worship God, and instruct their kids to help them grow with knowledge of the Bible. And so there's four parts of family worship, and they're in these parts are given in the online bulletin with a little bit more detail. And so if you're not taking notes now, you can go and grab those in the next day or two. But there's four parts. There's reading the Bible together. There's singing about God. There's praying together, and then there's memorizing together. And if you will just focus on those four things, it doesn't have to be long, doesn't have to be a half hour, hour long service. We're talking 5 or 10 minutes a night. And maybe it's not even every night, maybe it's not practical, but as many nights as you can do. Then over time, it will have an impact. In my family, right now we have kids ages 4 to 11. So ours is going to look different than those with kids that are older or younger than us. But right now, we read the Bible. We read the actual Bible together, the paper Bible. But we've also read tons of children's Bibles in the past. And so we'll start by either reading a children's Bible or maybe a part of a passage from the Bible, just going through a book of the Bible together. And then there's no preparation for me. I just go and I read it, and I'll maybe point out a thing or two, and I'll ask a question or two. That's all. And then we'll go into a time of singing. And we'll sing just one song, really even just one part of a song. And my kids have, on the radio and everywhere, you get a lot of the contemporary music. I love the contemporary music. But we try to build in them some of the more historic hymns. And so we pick out some of the really good hymns, and we just sing parts of those. Holy, holy, holy. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. How marvelous, how wonderful. Great is thy faithfulness. Those songs are just filled with great theology. And if you just even learning those, because the more you sing them, the more they memorize it, those are great words to have instilled in your mind. But lastly, there's memorizing together. And so this is where we take either a Bible verse that we work through or a good Protestant catechism. And we'll go through a question about that. And so we'll just learn a Bible verse or a question and just go over that just for 30 seconds before the end. And now, so this past week, 2 weeks ago, my family was going through Matthew chapter 22, the four verses on the great commandments. So we worked on that for about a month. And finally now, my 11-year-old, my 8-year-old, and my 6-year-old can all recite it at no problem. Before that, we did the Ten Commandments, at least parts of each Ten Commandment. It took maybe 2 months, but over time, they learned those. I've seen, if you will just repeat, 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 and make it fun, they will learn it. They will learn it if you encourage them to. And so after that, this is a short time, 5 to 10 minutes. But again, do it over and over and over. And that will eventually begin to instill things in their life as they're learning about the Bible and about worship. Now, if you want to see examples of my family do it, I've put maybe about a month's worth on Facebook, on our main Island Pond Facebook page. So just search back about a week or search in the text box for family worship, and you'll see a number of those. So I'm going to close with this illustration or with this story here that I read about World War II. And this is when the Americans were fighting in the Pacific. And they were bombing different cities in Japan as they got closer and closer. And many times I read about how the pilots, the bombers, would get to where they needed to go to drop the bomb. But at that point, the clouds were covering or the smoke from the other bombs were blocking where they needed, where their designated target was. And so when they would get to the general area, they would just basically drop the bomb and get out of there. And so I read like how in the bombing raids over Tokyo, they were extremely destructive, but not because of the bombs themselves, but because of the fire that spread from the bombs. And so the bombs created very few casualties. But then this fire began to spread and spread among the wood houses around Tokyo. And so the place just lit up. And hundreds of thousands of people, I think 100,000 people, died or were injured from the fires there. Now listen, I'm going to be honest with you that there are many times raising kids, I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. And I have no doubt that many of us as parents feel that same way. But that's okay. That's okay. As parents, we are not called to be perfect. We are not called to know exactly what we're doing. We are called to be like those bombers who go to the general direction of where we're called to go and just drop the bombs that we need to drop. And so I want to encourage you parents this morning to drop the bombs of modeling your life after Jesus Christ. Drop the bombs of teaching them to love church. Drop the bombs of mission trips and of applying their faith. Drop the bombs of family worship, those little bombs of prayer and biblical singing and scripture and memorizing. And now, will any of that hit the target right then? I have no idea. I don't know. But we are not called to light the fire. We are called as parents to drop the bombs. And who knows when God will come and spark that fire in their lives. But let me tell you, it will be far more likely to happen if you will just go in there like that bombing raid and drop bomb after bomb after bomb of the gospel message and of teaching them the Bible and of teaching them about Jesus Christ. And so I encourage you today, yes, will you make mistakes? That's fine. Then drop the bomb of humility and ask for forgiveness. And then move on with dropping the bombs of teaching them and instructing them and discipling them. And keep on doing it all the way until they leave the house. And then when they come back to do the laundry, drop some more bombs. Do you see what I'm saying here? Drop the bombs and let God do the rest. And there rose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. Church, may that not be said about our generation. May our church, may our kids know and love Jesus Christ. Amen. Let's go ahead and pray this morning.